You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Yeah, something went wrong.
Hey, Matt.
Bob Nielsen joins us right now. My new phone doesn't have an audio jack. It only does Bluetooth, and it has this other USB-C thing that's in my car. So if I wasn't the quick criminal on my feet that I am, we would not be talking right now. So anyway. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Get the hand crank from me. We gotta wind up.
First of all, I want you. I don't have any specific agenda. I wanted to have you on because we haven't talked in a bit. But I wanted you to relay your story about what you're doing in your homeowners association with your with the Vietnam group you started, and you guys have got together again. So, talking about it's never a bad thing, but tell everybody what you've done and how that thing has evolved.
I'm glad you asked, because a year ago we decided to have a group. There's about 400 families that live in my community. It's a 55 plus community, and we decided to have a little get together for an hour or two. Anybody that was in Vietnam to talk about what they did. And we had last year about 20 people get together, and stories were coming out that were amazing. One couple, the wife told me afterwards the stories her husband were telling the group she'd never heard before. They'd been married 50 years. So we did it again this Monday, and we had about 15, 16 people show up. We had a couple of new faces. We had one guy that just moved in. He was in the Air Force in Vietnam, and he was on one of those Puff the Magic Dragon planes.
Yeah.
That fired with all the machine guns, and he did 264 combat flights supporting Marines and I Corps. And so he was able to tell us some stories. And we had one young man whose dad was on a Navy ship in the Mediterranean. The Liberty, when it was attacked by the Israelis, and the U.S. refused to give it any help. Your buddy, Mr. McNamara, and President Johnson refused to send aid to it, and 53 sailors were killed, and God, 100 and some were wounded. And his dad was on the ship, and he was telling the stories. So we had quite a discussion, and it lasted about an hour and a half, and it was almost like people had come back from the war, closed the box, sealed it up, put it away in the closet, and didn't talk about it for 30 years.
Almost.
It was good medicine.
Almost. Isn't that the way, that's the lesson, right?
Yeah, it's exactly what they did, because you didn't dare talk to anybody in those days.
Right.
So it was quite a good discussion, and then this morning I've been trying to help a wounded vet that came through Walter Reed about 10 years ago, a young lady who lost both her legs below the knee in an IED explosion, and she's a single mom, and she's looking for work in Tennessee, so I've been trying to help her pull somebody with Turner Construction. So I'm still keeping busy and staying out of trouble, more or less.
All right. What do you learn when you do those things? Now you've been around this stuff forever. I mean, you fought in Vietnam, so somebody who's been around as long as you shouldn't be able to learn a whole lot new that you don't already know. Yay?
Well, what's fascinating to me is that, and I this was reinforced by talking to one of my platoon commanders at a reunion a couple of years ago. We were both out in support of 5th Marines near Tam Key out in some rice paddy, and he and I had been in the same battle for a little while, and he and I were probably a couple hundred yards apart in this rice paddy, and his version of what went on and my version were completely different. When you sit around a room with people that were in different branches of the service in different times, if you were in the same area but a month later, it was a different war. And if you were in the same area but 100 miles north or south, it was a different war. And if you did two tours and came back 18 months later, it was a different war. And the guys that were divers for the Navy in the Mekong Delta saw a completely different war than the guys flying gunships out of Da Nang to support the Marines and the Air Force. And so everybody's story is remarkably different. And I don't think it ever occurred to me, based on what I heard of World War II in Korea, it would appear that way. But it's something I learned with time. So if you were over there in Vietnam, you might have been only a couple miles apart from some buddies, but you were in a totally different world. And then, of course, things changed with leadership and who you were working for, what units you were attached to, that kind of stuff. So everybody's got a story to tell, and they're remarkable in their differences. And it's really pretty amazing when you hear it all come out. And it's virtually the same story, case after case. They've all kept their mouth shut for years and didn't talk about it. So I think it's good medicine, and I think it's good, you know, interestingly enough, it's part of post-traumatic winning that you got to talk about this stuff. And I think it's good that people do that. And I've gotten a very interesting response. We even had one lady that showed up twice now that was a protester. And what she ends up talking about is her dad was in the Army in World War II, and he was in the Battle of the Bulge, and then he was one of the first troops into Auschwitz. And she tells a story that just make your hair stand on end. And, you know, she asked if she could come. I said, sure, why not? You were around that same time and would love to get your perspective. So it's remarkable how young and naive we all were.
Well, I mean, I think that's why they send young people to fight the wars, right? Because people that are older won't go. Would it surprise you if I told you that there's a 10th commandment now? And it's actually the first commandment, and it's as plain as the nose on your face. But as I've watched this thing now almost over the course of the last year, you know, grow, and I've seen the effect on people. The first commandment is now: stop faking your mental health. Stop faking that you're not touched by life. Because if you're not, then what you want me to believe is that you've gone through life with all the ups and downs and you don't have any issues. Right? And that's laughable.
It's hogwash.
Right, right. It's like, I mean, and I don't care. I mean, you may not have them, you know, to the degree that other people do, but they still affect you substantially. And you've got, and here's the reason. If you talk about it, all you do, and Bob, this is what you're doing. All you're doing is enabling other people, to talk about their stuff. That's all you're doing.
Absolutely. And, Mac, I can tell you this. Honestly, there's not a single day nowadays that I don't think of Vietnam 100 times before noontime. and I think of the incidences, and I think of people, and I think of things they did, and things I could have done or should have done, and it's every single second. And this is 55 years later.
Yeah. Well, you know, so that's let me tell you, I mean, I know it's not going to surprise you, but, you know, the, you know, people come up and they ask, why has nobody, why didn't anybody tell me any of this?
Yeah.
Right? Why are you the first person? I said, well, do you want me to answer the question? And they're like, yes. I said, because I'm the smartest human being that you know. That's why. I'm the only one that figured it out. Right? And they start laughing. Right?
But it's so true, Matt, because post-traumatic winning brings that out. It's really remarkable. You know, I've watched what you've done with it this past year, and what's been fascinating to me, I continue to do my classes for 100 entrepreneurs right. at Walker Reed and Fort Belvoir.
I want to come back and do one of those.
Oh, I'd love to have you. But every one of our programs ends up talking about post-traumatic winning.
And so,
how post-traumatic winning is part of your recovery. And it's as much of a piece of your recovery as getting a prosthetic leg. I mean, and it's remarkable how we all end up focusing on that same subject.
Well, here's what I've learned is that there is no other path. Right? It's not like there's like 17 paths that you could go down. Right? Right? And, let's choose this one. You have a couple of choices. You can go down the path where you try to medicate yourself and talk to people about things that you can never talk to a good place for the rest of your life. Or you can choose the only other path that's available. And that is to give of yourself and to help other people. And so to me, it's not like there's a lot of discretion in this son of a bitch. There is no other choice.
In fact, the reason 100 entrepreneurs is so important, we do a good job of patching up the wounded vets. You know, we got prosthetics, we do great with amputations, all this stuff. But the mental injuries, the TBI, the kinds of things like that, and the post-traumatic winning that's in the head, that's still there. That doesn't go away. You don't patch that up and hide it with a Band-Aid. So you got to deal with that.
Well, one of the things that I got asked here in the last couple of weeks when I was doing this was, what could you say to this group of guys who experienced this? Can you say something to them? And I said, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely. Well, what I said is, you're never going to get over it.
Yep.
There's no words that I'm not going to hand you a secret decoder ring today, right? Decoder ring so that you can figure it the fuck out. You know, the truth is you'll never get over it and it's okay. But if you'll embrace these truths and you'll use that experience to touch the other lives of people. And let me tell you, I think that huge strides could be named, it could be made in the area for first responders, because they're in out and amongst the population where they live all the time. They're crossing people that are struggling all the time, and you can affect them all the time. You know, so I think that's an awesome. What's really interesting though to me, Bob, is they are where Vietnam vets were when Vietnam vets started the vet center.
Exactly.
And I mean, they don't want to go. They're all fucked up. But nobody's going to say it. So the system that's been created by the city and the union is you can go seek help from, you know, the behavioral therapist for the department. But if you hit certain flags because you're telling the truth, right, then you may get pulled from the truck or you may get your shield pulled.
And then we put two X's next to your name and all of a sudden you don't have your badge anymore.
Right.
I mean, it's so
what happens is, nobody says shit, and they have that shit, and they go back out there. To me, the only time that you should be allowed to be pulled is if you have a serious mental health disorder, schizophrenia, bipolar, you know, manically depressed or something like that, or you're a functioning alcoholic. If they make that determination, then you should be pulled. But you should be pulled to a probationary status. When that stuff gets resolved, you have the right to go back to work. Because until you do that, nobody's going to show up. But I told him this. If I was you, the system I would start, I would clone the VA. I'd clone the vet centers. And what I would do is I would put that underneath the union. but it would be a satellite, right? Those records stay local, and it would be the best retired firefighters in the area that would work at those places. So there would be guys that you respect and want to go talk to.
Yep. Now, they've got a huge hurdle, and I mean, the same thing is true in the New York City Police Department.
Oh, my God.
And it goes on and on and on. And the system's broken down because you can't have that tag next to your name. You know, I went to get mental health advice. And you know, what those guys go through is exactly the same as what guys in combat go through. And I lived on a block in New York before we moved to California, and there were five cops on the street and a fireman, and they were their own little clique, their own little fraternity, because they all were dealing with the same issues, but you couldn't get help, quote, within the system. And what ended up happening is alcohol became a huge part of the solution.
Exactly. That's my point. That's your solution?
Yeah.
That's about as much of a non-solution as a solution has ever been in our nation's history. And it's interesting that they said that I got told by a group of first responders that, there's even an element of our culture that ridicules you for going to seek help.
Exactly. Oh, you're weak. No, it's sad, and it festers upon itself.
Oh my God! No, it's just
glad you went to Las Vegas to talk to those guys.
Well, it's amazing. Honestly, it's amazing when you begin to talk to first responders, and I've talked to them here in Orange County. I've talked to them in Sacramento, where I'm from. I've talked to them in obviously not so many in Las Vegas, but I went up there. I mean, they're interested, and so I am surprised. I thought they would be better at it than the reports I've gotten from everybody, and my Lance Corporal from 34 years ago, he called me after, you know, a few hours after I'd done it, and he said, "Wow," he said, "I just want to tell you that we get so much of this stuff advertised and auditioned in front of us, but," he said, "none of us have ever seen anything like what you did today." I said, "Well, thanks." He said, "No," he said, "the power of it, the truth, but your conviction, because you've lived it, is not something we've ever seen." He said, "I just want to say, you know, I mean, I served under you, Mac, you know, 35 years ago, and it was awesome. Thank you." And so it's exciting because that fade, that line of operation, is really, really cool to think that would open up and you could help ease the pain there. You could help ease the stigma. And I would say this, right? And I say it all the time, the door to destructive behavior, right? The facing movement to that door is isolation. And once everybody learns that, look, we're all fighting it. If we all tell the truth and we're there for each other, right? As long as you have somebody to talk to, you don't make that facing movement. And so, you know, yeah, you can do that in conjunction with mental health professionals, but if you do it with the people you work with, the people that you love, and the people that care about you, man, that's a huge step down the road. So.
And the turning point, Mac, is when you begin to reach out and help others. And you've seen this yourself.
Oh, my God.
When you start helping others, all of a sudden, a whole lot of problems start disappearing.
Yeah, let me just tell you, I mean, I asked Libby to record something for me the other night, Sunday night. And she did. And it was her talking about, you know, when and really it was Libby that taught me about the giving piece. I didn't understand it. And
I heard her.
And so the way she articulates it, you know, and when you get to the end of what she said and you hear her voice, she says her voice changes. And she said, "Mac, I used to lay in bed and say a prayer asking for somebody to help Luke. And now I say a prayer of thank you." But what you hear in her voice takes your breath, takes your breath away.
Yeah.
Takes your breath away.
And I know just from watching the vets that I've worked with, and when they start doing something constructive with themselves and then they start reaching out for others, bingo, there's a change. All of a sudden, you're something of value and you're doing something good, and it rings a bell right there and says, oh my God, I've turned the corner. And you gotta open up and start talking about this crap.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Jack Riley told me a story that when he started, he just was going in for a doctor's appointment, and there's another 3rd Marine Division guy in the doctor's office. He said, I don't even know that guy's name. And we just sat there and talked. And he said, we talked for maybe 20 minutes about Vietnam. And he said, I left. I felt so good after we talked.
Yeah.
He said, and that was my first experience really talking about it. And he said, and then there, one of our squads had a reunion. And they went crazy afterwards. And I said, what do you mean? He said, oh, my God, they wouldn't shut up about it.
Exactly.
Right? Exactly. And so that's when we put the company reunion together. Right?
And then we start having mini reunions. You know, 5 of them would get together in Florida or something.
Right. For them, it started with the squad, and it was down, I think, in Florida or Alabama someplace. And Jack wound up going. Even though he wasn't even in the squad, he went. And he said, when we all saw that, we said, we got to get the company together. And that's when. And so, he's never stopped being a squad leader of 2nd Squad, 2nd Platoon, Indy Company, 3rd Battalion, 9th Marines, ever. And so.
What are you going to do is listen to him.
He's one of the coolest guys. And I just keep having those experiences over and over and over and over. And so it's really cool. Mac, ask Bob about new things he's learned. So he just mentioned something that he kind of relearned. Is there anything that has really opened his eyes since he started going down this road with you? As the godfather of All Marine Radio?
Well, a couple of things we've been doing. With 100 entrepreneurs, I've been getting vets that I helped start a business 10 years ago, come back to talk. And we just had one, H.G. Tran. He had traumatic brain injury and lost an eye, and he was an Army radio man, and he went out after coming to our classes and working in the government sector for a while. He said, I want to start a construction company. He started a construction company and got it up to doing $50 million worth of work a year and sold it to some of the staff, and now he's off setting up a master franchise in Texas with 54 stores coming up. So he came in and talked to our guys. And next week, something different I'm doing. I got to know one of the owner of the World Series champion Nats at Walter Reed this year, and we actually got Pat Horan invited to Nats game to throw out the first pitch. But next, right after Thanksgiving, we're going to have a class here in Bethesda for 100 entrepreneurs and have one of the staff, one of the senior-level staff in the Nets, come out and talk about career opportunities for veterans in professional sports. And so we're taking the people we've met through the program and reintroducing them to the vets that are still out there that need help. And I can't tell you how many of them really want to be their own boss. They're sick and tired of working for some shithead or somebody giving them asshole orders. They want to be their own boss. So we're going to help them do it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It works.
Well, you know, and I think when people see that not only that, you know, they can help, but there's specific ways that you can help and things that you can that you can help with, then I think that changes. It's not this general support, you know, help a vet. And,
well, what's become that is one vet helping another.
Yeah.
You know, a guy that was wounded 12 years ago helping somebody else. Pat Horan, you know, shot in the head, lost a chunk of his brain the size of his fist, and now he's got a blog on Facebook helping vets with traumatic brain injury and epilepsy to share stories and talk to each other when they need help. How great is that? That couldn't talk for a year and a half or get out of bed, and now he's helping others. I mean, that's incredible.
No, it's like stuff that's literally not believable.
Yeah, it really, and you've met Pat and Patty, and you know what an incredible couple they are. And, you know, she's caregiver of the century, but by God, he's passed out helping others with the epileptic seizures, and it's phenomenal. And if Pat can do it, believe me, anybody can do it. And it's got to be, Max, something you're passionate about. And you know Pat and Patty are passionate about helping with TBI and epilepsy.
Well, you know, when it becomes your life, it tends to be that way, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It tends to be that way.
And they get a lot of vets that have TBI but got discharged and gone on to do other things, and then the seizures come. Who the hell do they turn to talk? What do I do?
Yeah, what do I do? Who understands? Well, you know, it just seems to be that has been such a difficult problem for so many people. But again, that's the important of the importance that I've learned of talking about it, right?
Yep.
And that is, if when you talk about it, other people want to come and tell you their story. But if you just stand up and say, "Hey, this is really important. You know, people are dealing with it, and you know, we got to take a look at this."
Or set an appointment and come in and see me in 3 weeks.
Well,
that doesn't work.
Well, but again, but if you don't talk about your own stuff, if you don't pull your pants down first,
yep,
doesn't work. They don't respond.
Yep. Well, that's why your PCW programs work, because you got a whole bunch of people, including the division CG, talking about problems they've had.
Well, and let me tell you, and I've had people introduce it that don't do that. It doesn't work the same way. It's not as powerful. Now, look, you have Matt Kiker talking. You have, you know, Parker talking about, hey, pay attention for these reasons. And they do it, which is why I stuck those things in there. But the difference between the commanding officer showing up or the executive officer showing up and telling a powerful story of what they deal with is amazing. It's amazing. All right, any final thought before I let you go?
Everybody, support 100 entrepreneurs. Turner Construction is looking for vets. We want to give them, get them into career opportunities and keep doing what you're doing, Mac, with PTW.
Got it. All right, sir. Thank you.
Take care.
You bet. That is Bob Nielsen here on an All Vietnam Veteran Wednesday. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ken Rogers will join us. More of this program coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good. But I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, Call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Come on, I don't play that kind of music. When we have Vietnam guys on, I got to play like Vietnam music. Yes. The movie Apocalypse Now gave this song a new life. Joining me from Boise, Idaho, thereabouts. Did you live right in Boise, on the outskirts? What part of Boise did you live in?
I live in a small town called Cuna, K-U-N-A, which is a little southwest of Boise, although it's not little anymore. It's growing like crazy. So,
Boise, pretty popular town. Quality of life, pretty nice. And there's a great, great old state penitentiary in Boise. I think it might be a territorial penitentiary, for God's sake.
Yeah, it is. It's... and they've maintained it well, and they have a lot of events there. And Boise itself is growing like crazy. Lots of construction, a lot of people coming there from Orange County, I think. So,
well, you might want to lock the door then.
Yeah, well, I understand that. So, you know, when I moved here, I moved here from California. My wife and I drove our cars down, got our drivers, our license plates changed. We were out in the parking lot changing our California license off of to put Idaho on. This guy walks out and he said, I wouldn't let anybody see me doing that here.
Word might get out.
You know,
well, wait a minute. Why did you have California plates? You're an Arizona guy originally, right?
Yeah, but we moved here from Northern California. So,
what part of Northern California? I'm a Northern California guy.
Sonoma County.
Oh, that's up with the hippies.
Well, yes, there were a few of them there, although most of the hippies that I knew in the 70s that lived there had turned rich and kind of got conservative. So.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like a death blow for a hippie, conservatism.
Well, yeah, but you know, I asked one of them, I said, I remember when you used to have long hair and you were in the Longshoremen's Union and you were for bringing down the system. I said, what the hell happened to you? he says, I didn't have anything to conserve, man. So now I do, so I'm conservative.
You know what? It happens, right? But, before, when I was burning my draft card, yelling, you know, all the shit I yelled when I didn't have anything. Yeah, life tends to change you. I can do math now.
Right.
Talk to us, give us an update on, first of all, for people that I've never heard, you're doing a second documentary. This is Well, first of all, I didn't even introduce you. This is Ken Rogers, just so everybody knows. He's a veteran of Vietnam. He's born and raised in Arizona and lives up in Idaho now, and made a documentary about his experience in Vietnam called Bravo Common Men, Uncommon Valor, which is the story of Bravo Company, 1st Battalion, 26 Marines at Khe Sanh. And I would just tell you this. It is one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. I'm not saying that because Ken and I are friends, because I'm not like that. But when I watch it, right, I say things when I do post-traumatic winning like, you're never going to get over it. I see scenes in Bravo, and you hear those guys talking, and they're reliving it in high definition. You can see it. Like, you're watching it, and you can see it, and, you know, and it's just, to me, so validates, you know, these things that I've been told in my life by other Marines. And it inspires me to keep doing what I do. And again, from the start of it, where you hear, what's that dude's name talking about his arm being stepped on by an NVA patrol?
Steve Weeks.
And you hear, and I mean, it is so vivid. It's so powerful. And it's awesome. But that, tell everybody how that begets, the second documentary and then where you are, in the second documentary.
Okay, so after we finished making Bravo and we were around screening it, one of the guys that's in the film, Ken Corco, who won a Navy Cross for his valor on March 30th, 1968, at the siege of Khe Sanh, said to my wife, he says, you know, your wives are combat veterans too. So she took that, and then our editor, John Nutt, who edited Bravo, said something to us about, you know, you need to make a film about the women, that are married to these guys. So my wife decided she was interested in making a film about the wives of combat veterans, and so we embarked on that some time back, and we've interviewed 11 women, World War II, Korean War, Desert Storm, Vietnam, Korea, the current Afghan, Iraq wars, and got like 24 hours of interview, which we're now trying to distill down into something shorter. We're close, I think, and hopefully we can get it in through the technical business of sound mix and color correction and have it available in the spring. So,
how, just give everybody an idea, what's the flash to bang? So you get the idea, how long will this take to do?
Finish it up?
Well, the whole thing, from the time you get the idea to the time that you do the opening. I'm going to the opening too, by the way, just so you know. Is it going to be, does it require a tuxedo?
No. I just
rented one last week. I look pretty fucking good in it. I want to wear another one, man.
Yeah, I saw a picture of you.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
Motherfucker can clean up.
Yeah. So anyway, it's you know, this took some time. We got the idea, really started on this in mid-2015, and interviewed four women fairly rapidly, five women fairly rapidly, and then it slowed down because we were trying to get some diversity, regional ethnic diversity, and finding people that we could interview that didn't know anything about us was a little more difficult, but we got it done. And then there was travel expense and, you know, hiring crews and getting on site. So we will be, you know, it'll be close to 5 years.
Wow, 5 years. What? Okay, let me ask you this stuff. So you said hiring crews. What does that mean?
Well, you got to have video people and sound people, and
so what you do is when you find somebody and say, well, okay, we're going to go interview them, and then you're going to and then you you hire local people. You don't do your own stuff. You hire local professionals to record and both, you know, obviously audio and video, what you do, and that's all hired locally.
No, actually, we've done that. We did some of that with Bravo, but in this case, we for some of the interviews, the local interviews, we used some people here we've worked with before that we like, and then we took them to California and to Texas, and they got busy. So we had worked with a guy in Springfield, Illinois, named Brian Crowdson, on one of the interviews in our previous film, and I contacted him and asked him if he was interested in working with us. So he drove to Wisconsin and Atlanta and Indiana and did our last three interviews. So
talk to me about, I mean, how, let me just say, here's, I want to ask you if you have the same dilemma I have. I have so much good stuff in post-traumatic winning. I get frustrated because I don't know how to, I don't know how to trim it, you know? And I look at stuff and I'm like, oh, I can't make that go away. Or I look at something else and I'm like, I can't make that go away. Do you get to the same point with a film that says, you know, if that goes away, it impacts this, 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 and this that gets said either at a different point in the film or whatnot? How do you stitch that stuff together?
Well, it's really hard because that's the dilemma. We have a lot of really good stuff and hours of it. And it's like somebody once gave me the advice that you have to kill your darlings. And, you know, so we, you know, we try to figure out what the story is, and of course, we could go at it from multiple aspects, and so could you, I'm sure, of what you're trying, the story you're trying to tell at any particular time. So we try to figure out, you know, what the plot arc is and how we want this thing to, you know, to grab the audience and then hold them in so they don't get bored, and then finish with a bang, and that's kind of, you know, start structuring the individual interviews to reflect that thing. And one of the things that we've been doing is, like, I just watched all of this stuff we've got, and it was whatever emotionally stabbed me was stuff that we really started paying attention to. So
whatever,
my wife
was,
did the same thing.
Was whatever was emotionally draining?
Yeah, or you know, I mean, God, Jesus, you know, I mean, right. You have you can have an intellectual reaction to stuff, or it can, you know, sizzle you a little bit. And I think in film, you know, that's important. So you gotta be able to have that sizzle. So
that it has to be. So explain that, Bo. I mean, is it the? See, for me, and I just did this, I recorded something the other night with Libby, who taught me about the place above the clouds that you can go, because I thought that I could help people. What she taught me was the impact of my giving, and, I mean, she says in the piece of audio that, you know, I think what people sometimes overlook is, you know, when people are in that dark room, there's a whole lot of other people in there with them. And that when you get them out of that dark place, a whole lot of other people, you know, come out of that room with them. And then she said towards the end, and her voice trails off when she says this, because you could tell how emotional it is for her. She says, I used to lay in bed and pray that he would get help. Now I lay in bed and I say a prayer of thanks. And you can, I mean, you can feel the power of the words. I use a piece of audio where Elizabeth Smart talks about that night, Brian David Mitchell, I think is his name, is raped me. And then she says, and her voice trails off when she says it. And then she says this, but it would be the last time. And her voice trails off. And the power of it is just like, and I've heard it, I don't know, I've heard it hundreds of times, and it never ceases to move me. That in combination with the pictures of her at the time where she's a 14-year-old girl. And so, yeah, I'm learning about the power of imagery, and I've always known about the power of voice, but I'm learning about the power of imagery. Can you see it? Can you see it, Ken, when you do it, when you film it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like you can, you know, it's visual. It's visual and it's, you know, and it's visceral. A lot of it's visceral. And to me, that's what matters is what is visceral. What strikes me is a visceral moment. You know, when these women, you know, these women that we interviewed for the most part, have, you know, basically been through some version of hell with their husbands and they're still married to them and they talk about what they've dealt with. But, it, you know, they love these guys and they stick with them. And when they talk about the emotional moments in those lives, it's visceral. I mean, it's, you know, it's like you're telling me one thing that I know intellectually, but this other one that gets down inside me and really sticks in there.
Right. And let me read the definition of visceral for all of you who may not know what it means. Ken actually just almost defined it. Relating to deep inward feelings rather than to the intellect. So the intellect would be, you know, these women have hung in there for years with men who've had not only physical injuries, but emotional injuries, right, who've tried to hide them and not talk about them. And then they explode out of those places, and guess who's standing there when the explosion occurs? These women. So you can understand that intellectually, or you can hear her say, but that night would be the last time. And you can hear the emotion in and what she connotes in her voice, and it takes your breath away.
There it is.
So what's the next project?
I don't know. you know, making films is fun, but it costs a lot of money.
Does it? Well, come on, as much money as you've made off the first one. I mean, good Lord,
I didn't make
man.
Any money off that. I'm still in the hole on that, dude.
You got to be getting ready to look at coastal property on the Oregon coast, yes?
Yeah, well, you know, I'd like to have a place around Newport, but.
probably not.
Yeah,
well, you could. I got an empty bedroom every other week. You could come stay with me.
Yeah, well, I try to stay out of your neighborhood, man. There's too many people.
Yeah, you know what? That's a fact. But it's just me, Jack, and Joe here. So, and we got a small backyard with some lawn furniture. You can like have all the fun you want. Tell me something. I just asked Bob Nielsen this. Bob, you know, he does all of the stuff with the 100 entrepreneurs and has been helping people for a long time. One of the things I enjoy about you is you're a learner. What have you learned? Is there something that you would tell me that you learned, when you did Bravo? And then is there something else that you would tell me that you learned, doing this second documentary? What's the second documentary is called? I Married the War?
Right. That's okay. The name of it.
So. All right. Give me something one thing that you learned from each one of those events.
So you want to narrow that down a little bit?
No, not really.
Well, you know, when we did Bravo, I learned that probably for me, the big takeaway for that experience as I look at it now is the power of people telling their story. And, you know, I kind of knew that before I started, but when I sat down and interviewed those men, what I saw, and you talked about it earlier, that they're reliving this moment was this experience of articulating horror, basically, and savagery, and which I think we don't do very well because it hurts. And as I reflected on that and started watching this film and seeing how people responded to it, I came away with the thing that the power of telling your story is maybe one of the most important things you ever experience. Telling your story may be one of the most important things you ever do as a human. And so that's the big takeaway I had from Bravo.
Can I tell you something, a recent phenomenon? I've watched that now almost over the course of the last year. And it started the third day that I was doing post-traumatic winning. And General Furness had seen it twice. And so at the beginning of the third day, he stood up and he started talking about his shit. And I've known him for 30 years, right? And I knew that he had never spoken about that stuff in public. And he spoke about, you know, having 100 Marines killed under his command and the day that he learned that his 4-year-old daughter was mentally retarded. And he couldn't tell the stories without his voice cracking. And you had 1,000 Marines just staring at him. And the response afterwards, as Marines came up to talk, was, holy shit, I've never seen anything like this. And I've never seen a general officer or anybody close to that rank talk like that. And Ken, it fundamentally changed the way people looked at him. I mean, and now I require somebody to do that. And so they come in and they don't want to be there, right? Another bullshit class that somebody's making them go to. And then the table gets flipped over and shit goes everywhere and the mold gets broken when the first guy stands up. And this is the opso from 1-5 who talks about his daughter, you know, born with her spinal column wrapped around her vertebrae and she didn't have an anus. And he starts telling the story and the Marines are just looking at him like, holy shit. And then a Lance Corporal stood up and talked about, we're out on Libo in Huntington Beach. And we'd got done drinking and went back to the hotel room. We run across the street to get McDonald's. And one of my best friends gets hit by a car and killed. And I cannot get the sound of that out of my head. I cannot get the look, right, of what it looked like out of my head. And so, as you say, the power of the truth, and people will ask me now when they get set, they either volunteer or get voluntold to do it, and they come up and they say, well, what should I say? And I just say, just tell the truth. And then they do. And it is, that has become so powerful that I added a 10th commandment on Sunday. And the 10th commandment is the first commandment now, and it is stop faking. And tell the truth. Stop faking that you're okay, because every single one of us is scuffling with life. Stop and be courageous enough to tell the truth about yourself. Interesting. Interesting.
And the second thing I learned from this new movie, you know, is one of the really important things is not only do these men need to tell these stories, but the wives want to talk about it. They want to tell the story. They want to tell what it's like for them. And it's amazing to me personally to watch them articulate the levels of emotion that they have expended on helping their husbands. You know, I never paid any attention to that. My wife takes care of me. She pays attention to what I do. She tries to head off situations where I'm going to get pissed off at people, and I just kind of took it for granted. And so, watching these women has helped me understand that I owe my wife a hell of a lot more gratitude. So,
you know, I would love to do some interviews with them because I get asked that. Well, here's one of the things I say. One, you need to talk about your shit, okay, which is the hardest thing that we do. Because, and I know for guys like me, I blame the grandmothers of this country for me not doing that better. Because it was grandma's fault because, you know, grandpa was dead, but I heard that grandpa, right, he fought in World War II and he never talked about it. He's a great guy, right? That's how, you know, that's how men handle this shit. And then, and Uncle Larry, he fought in Vietnam, and I say this, it's not pointed at you, but it's a coincidence I say he's in Idaho. Larry never talks about it, but he lives in Idaho now. He's been drunk for 30 years, right? And we haven't heard from him, but that's a different subject, right? But I know growing up that men don't talk about their shit. And so I put myself in that isolated place. I put myself there. And so, that's a shitty place. But I think we're predisposed to go there, and we say shit like this: because I love you, I'll never go there with you. And I'm curious what you would think. What I've learned is, I think people have a greater requirement for intimacy, you know, and I don't mean specifically sexual intimacy, although that's a part of it. I mean, you're sitting on the couch watching a ball game, and he or she plops down next to you, right, throws their leg over your leg and starts reading a novel. Just the feel of somebody close to you, or that feeling when you're struggling, whether it's a sound of taps or something, and you feel them lean against your shoulder. And they don't even say anything. What do they say to you? I love you. I'm here for you. We need that. But they can't do that if we don't let them in and they don't know us. And so there's this horizontal theme that runs through post-traumatic winning, whether you talk about Eugene Sledge's life, whether you talk about Ken Rogers' life, whether you talk about Jeremiah Workman's life, right, is that their lives all change when they let somebody in and they tell their story. It fundamentally changes their life.
That's true.
It's pretty amazing. But but relative to spouses, I say the first person you should talk to is your spouse. And everybody looks at me like, what? And the spouses look at me like, this is a trick, right? Because this cannot be Marine Corps shit, right? You're saying talk to your spouse. And I say, no, you have to. You've got to talk to her. You need her to go there with you. Well, what happens if they don't want to go there? I said,
That happens.
I said, then look, find somebody who loves you, right? Who cares about you and won't judge you, and say, hey man, can I talk to you? I do that with my cousin Tom, right? And I talk to him about anything. But I would say I would make those recommendations both before you go see a therapist or in conjunction to go seeing a therapist, because it's not a mutually exclusive event, right? It's go get the help that you need. But. I would say the vast majority, Ken, of women that I've spoken to, they want to go there. And now you don't need to tell them every little gory detail, right? Or you might, if they show an interest to it. I want to know. Please tell me. And the only thing that my experience shows is that you become closer, right? Your level of intimacy, right, increases because she knows where you're at now. And we desperately need that. Your thoughts?
No, it's right. That's right. And to ponder, to watch, and to figure out what's going on with these wives that we've been interviewing, and to ponder the fact that they carry your load, man, and they do it willingly. You know, some won't. My first wife was not interested in it. I mean, we didn't talk about the war. She didn't want to hear about it. And that's fine. And we aren't married anymore, and for lots of reasons. But my second wife, we hadn't been hanging out with each other very long, and I was spilling the beans, man. I mean, the first person I had ever told anything about it to, in all honesty, and she wanted to hear it. And, you know, so, I mean, I have all this shit with PTSD going on still, and she carries my load. I mean, she's there with me. So that tells you a lot about how these women feel about you, and it's important. Let them help you.
Let me play a little Ken Rogers audio here. I play this in front of every audience, and Ken knows, he's a part of post-traumatic winning. Wherever I go, right, people hear Ken Rogers talk, and they always laugh too. And I'll play you the audio here as soon as here it is. So I gotta find Ken and then Ken's part in it. So give me 1 second to root around in this audio.
Yeah, your worst enemy.
That's my sister Peggy.
Oh, you're an asshole.
Oh, there's Ken.
Ships, you destroy accurately described. You get to
handling my PTSD.
Here's Ken.
You get to a, if you do it long enough, you get to a point where you accurately describe what you do. You destroy your life. You destroy the lives of the people who love you. You destroy your friendships because people just get tired of putting up with you. I mean, you know, you're an asshole.
when you drink and have PTSD. You're an asshole. I was just an ass. I was sarcastic, cynical, pissed people off, hurt their feelings, and didn't care. It was like, and until I, you know, I got married a second time, I was still drinking heavily, and, but I married a woman who understood that I needed to be able to articulate what had happened to me in Vietnam, and she listened, and I came to the conclusion that she wasn't going to stick around very long if I didn't get my shit together.
So what makes you stop drinking, ultimately?
Well, you know, I just figured out that I was either going up or down, and it was my choice, and I'd better do it now because I was about past the point of no return. Because I was like drinking a case of beer a day and then maybe a bottle of wine or half a fifth of whiskey or, you know, I mean, I was consuming large amounts of alcohol.
Okay, just so you know, Kent, there's two jaw-dropping moments there for people, because I watch the audience, right, and I've seen it so often. The first part is when you say, you're an asshole, right? And you say that about three different times. But then what? One thing that always hits me is when you say this, right? You know, I'd piss people off, I'd hurt people's feelings, and I didn't care. And when I hear you say that, I can hear, like, I can feel the hate, right? That is that, right? You know what I'm saying? When you're so bound by this thing that you've gone through, you don't give a shit what everybody feels. You know what you feel. And that's as far as you can see. So that's one of the things that hits me. And then at the end, the looks on their faces, when you say, I was drinking a lot. I was drinking like a case of beer and a bottle of wine or a half a fifth of whiskey every day. And they look and they're like, holy shit. And I said, yeah. Just so everybody knows, he didn't do that for like 3 months, okay? He did that for a long, long, long time. And they sit there stunned. I said, and then I say, so you don't have to take my word for it. If you want to try to deal with significant trauma in your life, listen to these people because they tried to do it. So you have a co-starring role in Post-Traumatic Winning every time I do it.
I hope I'm helping somebody. So
no, come on. Honestly, man, it is. And just since we've been sitting here, okay, let me read you an email. This is from a woman named Elizabeth. It was a pleasure speaking to you at the ball on Thursday night. Thank you for taking the time to discuss post-traumatic winning with me. I'm excited to learn more. As per your recommendation, Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning has been added to my reading list. What are other books that I can read? I look forward to hearing from you and working with you in the future. Thank you for the time, Elizabeth. You know, so I mean, this is like a nonstop parade in my life. But I mean, it's, as you said, Ken, it's visceral things like that people hear, and they walk up to me and said, it felt like that guy was talking straight to me. To which I always respond, he was, motherfucker. And they start laughing. Like, that's you, right? Yeah. Then he was talking to you. Like, I know.
I was talking to him. I was talking to him. You know, it's like a lot of people, you know, you can tell them all kind of good stuff, but if they don't get it on the gut level, it doesn't make any difference. I don't care.
Well, let me tell you, post-traumatic winning is only about the gut, man.
Well, it's got to be, I think, because you're talking to people who are, you know, when you're in a combat person, when you fight in combat, it's all visceral. I mean, all that crap strikes you down in the bottom of whatever the hell the soul or whatever it is. I mean, that's where it gets you. I mean, it marks you. It scores you. It slices you, it knifes you in places that aren't physical. I mean, and they can't be explained away by some philosopher. It's stuff that we don't really get, but we have inside of us. So that's what I think, and it's like if you don't penetrate into that, nobody's going to hear you.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't, and let me tell you, it's what I love about, and people come up to me and they'll want to talk to me about the presentation, and they'll say, how did you come up with all that? I say, well, most of it's from my radio show. And they're like, good God, man, I just feel like I fought somebody for like 8 rounds, man. I need to go home and take a nap. I said, well, you know, it's designed like that, right? You didn't know it when you walked in here, but you walked into a deliberate ambush, both of your brain and of your heart. And what I hope is when you leave here, your shit is tattooed forever. And when these thoughts come in your head, you're going to hear these people speaking to you. Right? And that's what I hope. And I hope it affects your behavior. Because that's the only way that we get this through this together. And let me just tell you, none of this is mine. Right? I'm just the... I've been really fortunate in my life to meet these people, and they've given me their advice, and I'm just passing along. None of this is new. This is all stuff Marines have handed down to each other for a long time, and I'm just kind of grabbing it and pulling it together. And they're like, you know what? That's why I think I like it so much, because it's like it's spoken in Marine. I'm like, yeah. It's like, it's pretty, which means it's pretty fucking blunt, right, Ken?
Right.
Yeah. 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 All right. What else? Anything else that I should ask you today that I haven't?
No, I don't know.
How's the bird watching? How's the bird watching?
Well, I'm going to New Mexico in mid December to watch cranes. So,
to watch cranes?
Yeah. Like sandhill cranes.
Like the kind that fly, right? Not the kinds that move.
Right,
Earth.
Right. The greater sandhill and the lesser sandhill cranes, down on the Rio Grande, that's where they go. One of the places they go. So another place they go is Central California. But if you're stuck in Orange County, you're not going to know that. so anyway, we're going to go down there. We're going to family for Thanksgiving, and then we're headed out to New Mexico for a couple of weeks, and then my granddaughter is graduating from Arizona State in mid-December, so we're going to go to Arizona, and I'm going to go watch her walk, and then we're going to come home. So,
where are you going for Thanksgiving? Where's that?
Sonoma County.
Oh, up there. Well, if you get to San Diego, we should have lunch then, man. I'd love to.
Yeah, but you know, I don't go there anymore. It's a skipper passed away. So, I haven't. That doesn't mean I won't, because over the course of my life, I've had to eat a lot of shit for doing stuff that I said I'd never do. So,
If you're in San Diego, I'll come down there.
Okay, well, if I get close, I'll call you.
All right, let me know. Right. I mean, look, I'm going to come to Boise for the premiere, right?
Right, premiere.
There you go. Are they going to be like flashing spotlight or spotlights and shit like that? Is that how you guys do it?
No, it'll be amongst a bunch of vintage warplanes. And attended by a wide variety of individuals, some of which you would probably really like to meet.
Well, you know what I'd love to do now that I'm thinking about it? I mean, unless I'm engaged doing post-traumatic wing someplace, I'd love to come up there and spend a few days and then, you know, maybe interview some of the women that you've interviewed that are in the movie and devote some time to it. Because, honestly, like you, it's an epiphany. Here's a funny story. So I get in, I don't know when it was. Shit, I've been doing this now for like 3 weeks straight, but... At the end of October, I went to Quantico to do this in front of what's called the Cornerstone Course. And that is for all lieutenant colonels that are going to take over battalions, colonels that are going to take over regiments, their sergeant majors and their spouses come to this thing, right? So they're all there in this beautiful, you know, brand new auditorium. It's gorgeous. And so one of the things I say in the presentation, right, is you got to stop faking mental health. So I'm up on the stage, right? Now there's all these guys sitting in there with their spouses. Now, if you're a lieutenant colonel or a colonel in the Marine Corps, right? You, just about the whole time you've been in the military, the Marine Corps has been at war. So these guys have multiple combat deployments and whatnot. So I say, you've got to stop faking mental health. With that, about a dozen heads of spouses turn about 45 degrees and look. Now, the guy's heads don't even move. They're staring straight ahead, right? Like, maybe if I just ignore her, she'll turn her head back towards the stage pretty quickly. And then a few minutes later, I say this, right? The fifth commandment, you've got to talk about it, right? And the first person you should talk to is your spouse. Now, the heads that turned 45 degrees, they didn't stop at 45 degrees at the time. They went straight up 90 degrees and stared at them. Right? And so,
yep.
I, like you, have learned, I mean, we can fake it, right? But they know the truth. They know the truth. They know we're faking it. And
they're observing your behavior. I mean, so they know,
right?
That what you say isn't what you do.
Right. And so, they know, you know what? And because they love us, they allow us to fake it in public. They don't call bullshit on us in public. But they know the truth. And so women get post-traumatic winning faster than anybody. Oh, trust us. We see old boy. He ain't all right in the head, even though he tries to fake it everywhere he goes. I know the truth. So it's really interesting. And it's, to me, also become a fascinating part, because they live with their own traumatic experiences, right?
Of course they do.
Holy shit.
You know, everybody has traumatic experiences, so they've got their own, and then they married one, you know? So, I just think they're remarkable people, and they don't get any credit for what they do, and they've been doing it for a million years, and, so I think it's a story worth telling, and if you want to talk to some of these women out there, then let's make it happen.
No, I'd love to. First of all, thanks for hopping on this morning on relatively short notice. I always enjoy catching up with you. And let me tell you, I absolutely, unless I'm otherwise engaged, am going to come up and do that, because, first of all, you've been awesome to me in terms of coming on, and the power of Bravo resonates in post-traumatic winning. Your personal, your voice, your picture is part of post-traumatic winning every time I do it. And your devotion to telling the truth about the experience, is inspiring for me. So let me tell you one other thing. The pen that you sent me, I love so much, right? I never take it with me because I'm afraid I'll lose it, and I would be devastated if I lost it. And the box, I saved the box that the pen came in. Yeah, that's what a dork I am about my pen, right? It's like, I look at the box like, I should throw that box out, and then I said, I can't throw the box out. That's the box the pen came in. Box got to stay. But Ken sent me a pen that's made out of wood from Belly Wood, and wrote me a very gracious letter. So I'm a huge fan of yours, and I always love having you come on, so thank you very much for coming on today.
Well, thank you, and thank you for all the work you're doing, and it's really important, and keep it up, because I think you're making a difference, sounds to me like.
Well, you know what? I think I'm on the verge of, you know, maybe making a really big difference, because all this has been done, you know, on the down low, word of mouth stuff, and I think, you know, after a year is done and there's a data set that goes with it, that you could say, okay, over the course of the past 12 months, this is what happened here. And, you know, it's going to be a stunning, be a stunning data set. And I think that data set is the thing that kicks doors open. Like, you could say a lot of stuff about, oh, I do this, I do that. But when you have data to back it up, that's when people will actually open their door and say, well, why don't you come here and do this? So
well, you know, especially in organizations like, the military, where everybody up there in command's got to be able to cover their ass, so data really helps. So,
well, you know, and I didn't really know how powerful that is, but, you know, people will not buck the mental health professionals, the PhDs, because if as a general officer, you get out in front of them and it blows up in your face, guess who's wearing it? So
yep.
I think there's a bias, and it pains me to say this, but general officers, a lot of them, are conformists. So I can risk the franchise, or I can, you know, I can stand behind the mental health people and not get too far out of my lane. But the only thing they've given us is more suicide. And do I accept that, or do I break out of that? And I think that, I think, you know, we have a little bit of a problem, and at the general officer level in the country, in terms of doing the right thing. And it's always been that way. I mean, it was that way in Vietnam. I remember reading H.R. McMaster's book, Dereliction of Duty. He quotes General Johnston, who was the chief of staff of the Army, who, after he retired, said, "I have to go to my grave knowing that I did not do my duty as the chief of staff of the Army, and young men died for it." I mean, it's one of the most brutal quotes I've ever heard in my life. And then, you know, the same thing happened with Secretary Rumsfeld, and you had General, what's that dude's name? Thomas, I can't remember his name. But he, you know, there was no phase four, right? Which is, what do we do after the fighting ends and need it for either Iraq or Afghanistan? And we're not supposed to go to war unless we have phase four thought through and planned, and this is how this thing ends. And we didn't have it. And then nobody said, hey, slow your roll. We can't ask people to die for something we haven't thought through, but we did. And so I think it's a problem. But hopefully, if you keep putting up data, at some point, even the naysayers have to say, yeah, it probably is something we would have to look at. So that's what I hope. That's what I hope.
Keep pushing.
Yeah, I will. All right, sir. Give my best to your better half, and tell her I still don't know why she's attracted to you, and she can go to see a therapist for that. I think there is help for it. But
she
rejected that in the VFW, right? Or where were we in San Marcos? The VFW that day?
No, we were in Fallbrook.
Fallbrook, but what was it? Was it the VFW or
it was
Legion?
It was VFW there in Fallbrook, and it was after the memorial ceremony for Colonel Pikes.
So we're there, and I never met Betty before, or, you know, I never met Ken in person, just over the telephone, and so I did my standard, like, needle pushing with Betty. I said, you know, Ken's a really interesting guy, Betty, and he's got some issues, and always, which is always the case, you look at him and see Romeo, so I believe that your issues are probably way bigger than his. She started laughing, but she was having none of it. She said, no, they're not. You don't know what you're talking about. But anyway, all right, well, give her my best, and good luck with the crane watching.
All right, sir. Thank you.
No, thank you, Ken. There you have it. Right. The.
Bye,
man. There you go. Bye. Ken Rogers here on, let me tell you, this is a hard job to get fired up for, isn't it? Yeah, not so much. Not so much. Ken Rogers, Lance Corporal in the United States Marine Corps, retired. You can find Bravo, Common Man, Uncommon Valor on Amazon Prime. You can watch it for free, I think, if you're a member. So there you go. Let me read some shithole weather updates since people took the time to write them. And I apologize for not reading them earlier. From Beverly in Churchbridge, Saskatchewan. I haven't read one of these in I don't know, it seems like a week. But anyway, Churchbridge is approximately 200 miles north of Minot. White-tailed deer hunting season continues in Saskatchewan and North Dakota. Let me tell you, that's a big deal. Schools stop on the opener. Yeah, they don't even hold school because nobody shows up. In Churchbridge, it's overcast and 21 degrees. Winds are out of north at 9. Afternoon clouds with a few breaks in the sun. Going to be 19 this afternoon with winds out of the northwest at 11. So that's what it is in Churchbridge. Yeah, she got hers in early. Nancy. In beautiful western Pennsylvania, Weather today is typical for a late fall in Pleasantville and Erie, too, which is home of the band The Wonders in a movie. Currently drizzle in 38. That's not good. On the way to 42. Well, and the reason I say that's not good, because if it freezes at night, then you got frozen roads. So, no bueno. Winds out of north-northeast at 6, gusting to 7. A great day to curl up and listen to All Marine Radio. Well, do that, Nancy. And I hope you enjoyed it. From Chris in Worcester. Currently in Worcester. 36 degrees in Worcester, Massachusetts. Looking for a high of 40. Winds are out of the northwest at 6 to 8 miles an hour. Forecast is cloudy with a chance of rain, then possible snow flurries. Standard issue November day in New England. Chris from Webster, Massachusetts. Out. I got this one, too. I've got a number of emails about the prom gone wrong. I was talking about that. And it is funny. Right? Mac, prom gone wrong. One of your best episodes. Two things. One, I didn't bring a date to the Marine Corps ball for the first 7 years because of all the ways that evening could go wrong. Finally, had to bring my wife. By then, she knew what she got herself into. Oh, man. Captain Hall. Now, I wasn't at this ball that Tim and Jeff were talking about. But if you haven't heard that, they tell this hilarious story. And last week, we were at Chris Bronzy's change of command. Okay? When he took over the 15th MU. And Jeff Kenny was there. And General Furness came out from 29 Palms before he flew back to North Carolina. So he flew back. Right? And General Furness had tears in his eyes, remembering that. Right? And they're telling the story that this Captain Hall, right, he's inebriated at the ball. And General Monday, Carl Monday, you know, from North Carolina, Southern accent, he's up there speaking, you know, very eloquently. And he's thanking different people. And this Captain Hall from the back of the room yells, right? I can't remember his first name, like Tom. Thank Tom Hall! He's yelling his own name. And he yells it as he's coming out speaking. And everybody looks and goes, oh my God. And he does it again. Thank Tom Hall! Right? And then so he's talking about Captain Hall. I don't know his first name. Captain Hall. I was Fox Company, the basic school, 92-93. Captain Hall was awesome. I was belly laughing on the subway with headphones on listening to the Hall Ball story. I just looked at my cruise book and I think I found a picture of him. Is that him? Anyway, keep up the good work. SM, SF, MF, Gene, right? That means Semper Fi, motherfucker. And here's a picture of a captain. I don't know if that's Captain Hall, because I don't remember knowing him. He got there after I left, and Tim and Jeff were still there. So, anyway, this is a great job. And I just got another call yesterday asking me, hey, would you come to this Air Force base to do it? I said, give me a date, and we'll work out the details. So, cool. My son, my daughter-in-law, and my grandson are driving to North Carolina, so everybody drive safe, and good luck with the 2nd Marine Division. Makes us all proud. So, on that, thanks for listening on a Wednesday edition of Post-Traumatic Winning. We will cover a little bit of the Hall Ball again, I'm sure, tomorrow. Because I will share that email with Tim and Jeff. And we will, of course, have something to say about it, which is usual, customary, and normal. So, don't touch that dial. Hour one. In hour one, if you didn't tune in, I have had thoughts in my head developing about why the suicide number continues to go up. And when I talk to people about what they learn when people write reports, you know, I get consistently told you don't learn anything. They tell you that they weren't schizophrenic, they weren't bipolar, they weren't manically depressed, so they don't tell you why. And the more I see of this, the more I've concluded that, you know, the suicide rate in this country and in the Department of Defense, right, is the butcher bill for not allowing kids to experience adversity when they're young. It's not teaching them discipline. It's not allowing them to experience adversity and develop one of the key skills that you have to have in life, and that is how to overcome life's adversity when life kicks you in the stomach about five times in a row, or when life boots you in the face. And can you get kicked in the face more than once and get up, tighten your belt, and keep getting up? Because at some point, you'll win. But if you don't have that skill, life gets really tough. So I talk about that in hour one. So don't touch that dial. I think it's well done, but you may not. In any case, love to hear your thoughts about it. Have a great day on a Wednesday. Almarin Radio is over and out.